Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580 this morning. My name's John Paul, sitting in for David Inge today and Friday on Focus 580. Our topic in this hour is the economy in Illinois. You know, there are so many signs we see in the media out there regarding the economy, from gasoline prices and fuel prices to the unemployment index, the Federal Reserve and interest rates. I guess the question today is, what's all of that mean to you sitting here in Illinois? And today on Focus 580, our discussion will be about the Illinois economy. And can consumers around this great land of Lincoln pump new life into what many people believe is a weakened Illinois economy? Our guest today, U of I economist Fred Gertz. Fred is a professor of economics and member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He follows general macroeconomic issues, especially as they affect Illinois and Illinois government. We invite you to participate in the conversation today. You can call us in the Champaign-Urbana area at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or outside of Champaign-Urbana, you can call toll-free at 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Maybe you have a question for our economist. Maybe you have a solution to solve Illinois' economic woes or to pump up the economy. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, a lot of people like to rank and create lists. If you were to do that, what kind of grade would you assign to the Illinois economy right now?
I think it depends whether it's a short-term grade or a long-term grade. If we're talking about a long-term grade over a period of 10 years or so, I'd give Illinois a very high mark, probably a B-plus or an A-minus. If you're talking about the last several months, clearly we're not doing as well, nor is the country doing as well, so the grade there would not be as good. So, again, the Illinois economy has been very, very strong, surprisingly strong, over the last 10 years. It's not unusual for large, big, rich states like Illinois to grow less rapidly than the rest of the country. There's a phenomenon called convergence where high-income areas tend to grow at a slower pace than low-income areas, and that's part of the reason why the South has been catching up with the North in the last several decades. So you would predict that a state like Illinois, which is, in fact, one of the richest states in the country, wouldn't grow quite as fast. But in spite of that, we've done very well. We've actually grown at a faster rate than the national average the last 10 years. Our per capita income has increased faster than the nation as a whole. So we've done very well, and in fact, surprisingly well, for kind of an old industrial state. Now, we turn our attention to the current situation. We're in a very kind of worrisome situation right now, and part of the problem, we don't know exactly the direction we're going. It's clear that we've slowed down, no doubt about that. A year ago, there was concern about the economy overheating. The Federal Reserve was trying to slow the economy down, but not slow it down too much. They talked about a soft landing. The economy has slowed. The Federal Reserve has been successful in that sense. Now the question is whether we're in a soft landing or whether we're actually going beyond that and going to start to decline. And unfortunately, no one knows the answer because we're right at the point now where this is going to be determined. Most people, including me, believe that we are going to have a slowdown. We are in a slowdown, but it's not going to turn into a recession, that we're going to start to grow again, and that the growth rate for Illinois and the country is going to be positive, but not as fast as it was two or three years ago. So that's the consensus opinion right now, but there's a lot of possibility that things actually could get worse, that we could actually go into recession, or that we could rebound very strongly and get back to the days of 4 and 5% growth. But the consensus forecast is moderate growth and no recession.
Your view of a recession, the economist's view of a recession, is two consecutive quarters.
Right. You have to have 6 months or two quarters of decline, not just no growth, but actual decline in the level of national income. And so far, we haven't even had one quarter. The last quarter that's been reported was positive growth. So as far as getting into the counting of two quarters, we're not in that yet. So I think the hope is that won't happen.
But some of those indicators are not pointed in positive directions, I take it.
No. And also, this is a very – it's not just volatile in terms of the economy. It's also volatile in terms of opinion and optimism. It goes on almost a two- or three-week cycle. A couple of weeks ago, I think people were fairly buoyant. They thought that the worst was over. The last couple of weeks, the stock market hasn't been doing particularly well. We've had some of – in Illinois, the – the problems in Decatur with Bridgestone, Firestone, things of that sort, and the mood is a little bit less optimistic. But again, that's more psychology than it is economics. So I think the point is we are in a slow growth situation. We could go either way, but I think most people think we will go upward.
In fact, I was reading yesterday, the chief economist at Bank One in Chicago says this two-week period we're in right now is a really crucial period, especially if we're going to look for a turnaround in Illinois manufacturing. Is that?
Well, I don't think you can isolate it in terms of 2 weeks, but always the next 2 weeks is always the most important because it hasn't been determined yet. So it is clearly an important period because we are more or less at the bottom, or what we hope to be the bottom of the cycle, which is not a downturn, but just very slow growth. And the hope is that we'll start growing again. And I think we will. But again, I think no 2 weeks is going to make or break the Illinois economy or the national economy.
You referred a few minutes ago to the Illinois economy being rich, as yeah. Illinois being rich. Do we in Illinois follow the rest of the nation? Are we ahead or lagging behind the rest of the nation when it comes to economics?
Well, we're pretty much a reflection of the national economy because we are very diverse and very large. There aren't too many larger states, and we have very high per capita income, seventh out of all the states in the country. And several of the higher states are really not what I would call representative states. Connecticut or New Jersey or Delaware, places like that, are more almost suburban areas to larger states, larger metropolitan areas. So I think only New York and Massachusetts, in terms of a large diversified economy, are ahead of Illinois in terms of per capita income. So we are a rich state, and we are in fact reflective of a lot of things happening in the country. We have a big manufacturing base. Agriculture is not big in percentage terms, but it's very large compared to most other states. We have a strong service economy, especially in Chicago, with financial services and legal services, headquarters, things of that sort. So we are pretty much, I think, a reflection of the overall economy in the country.
The university and I guess your department have developed this thing called a Flash Index for the state of Illinois. Tell me what that is and what it measures.
Right. The Flash Index was developed by the Institute of Government and Public Affairs that I've been involved with for about 8 years or so. And it tries to give a very fast reading about how the economy is doing. One of the problems of most economic indicators is that by the time you receive the data, it's 2 or 3 or 4 months old, and you're really giving a picture of what it was in maybe March or April, not what it's like today. So the attempt with the Flash Index is to get very current, recent kind of information and use that as quickly as possible. And what we do there is to use Illinois state tax data. On the last day of the month, we have data for individual income tax collections, corporate tax collections, and sales tax collections. Those represent income, individual incomes, corporate income, and retail sales. So we get those basically a few hours after the data is released. We've compiled an index based upon those three factors, and that's the Flash Index. Now, the Flash Index has been declining fairly consistently over the last year, as has the overall economy, but declining doesn't mean that we're going into negative growth. Anything above 100 for the Flash Index means the economy is growing. Below 100 means that we're possibly in decline. Well, the last several months we've been bumping around 100, sometimes above, sometimes below, which again I think confirms what I was suggesting earlier, that we are basically in a no-growth situation right now. And the hope is the index will come back, the economy will come back, but that's the crucial thing we'll have to look at the next several weeks.
We're visiting today with Fred Gertz, a University of Illinois economist with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's also an instructor at the University of Illinois, professor of economics, and a member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. We invite your calls to ask questions to economist Fred Gertz in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free around the state of Illinois and Indiana at 800-222-9455. When you talk about that Flash Index, what role does the common Joe, the consumer, play in that? Where does that figure in?
Well, it's a very important component. Two parts of it. First of all, consumer spending is a very obviously a very big component of both the economy and of the Flash Index. The other is individual income, so the individual receiving incomes that would count in there. So both of those are important. What we found in the last several months is that consumer spending has been holding up fairly well. Consumer spending tends to be less volatile than other parts of the economy. So that's sort of holding its own. And consumer optimism is not great, but it's not really in significant decline. Income also has done, individual incomes have also held up fairly well. The one area that, not surprisingly, has been not very good has been corporate profits. Corporate profits have not been as strong as they were last year. That's really part of the explanation for what's happening in the stock market. The stock market is based upon expectations, and many of those expectations about future profitability have not been met, and that's one of the reasons why the stock market has not done well the last year or so.
Now, what are the signs that the common person in Illinois will see that the economy is indeed sluggish? I think that's right. Does that make us slugs here?
Well, I think the good news is that most people probably will not see it very directly in their own lives. Obviously, if someone were to lose his or her job, that's a catastrophic kind of thing. But unemployment still is very low in Illinois and the country. We're at about a 5% unemployment rate, which by historical standards is very low. So if someone is maintaining his or her job, their income's coming in, Social Security, that sort of thing is pretty reliable. Prices are not out of control. Inflation is still relatively modest. The manifestation of the slowdown may not be very, very noticeable. On the other hand, if you're involved in the stock market, if you're an investor or trying to maybe engineer a startup company that's dependent upon new capital, things of that sort, then the slowdown, I think, would be very, very clear and very, very difficult. But for the average person, a wage earner or a Social Security recipient, I think so far there hasn't been a lot of pain inflicted.
We have a caller on line one from Champaign who'd like to ask a question or comment for Fred Gertz.
Yes. Can you tell me what role politics plays in the growth and slowdown of the economy?
Well, I think fortunately the role is limited. We might like to think that the government could control things very well and always do the right thing and always keep the economy on an even keel. There are really two issues here. The first one is how powerful is the government to do these things? The second one is, will they do the right thing at the right time? Well, the first question, how powerful the government is really a kind of open question. But clearly, the Federal Reserve has some power, but they're not all powerful, regardless of the kind of faith we place in Alan Greenspan. He's not omniscient, not omnipotent. He can't do always the right thing at the right time. In general, the Federal Reserve has done a very good job, I think, over the last decade or so. And this is really their first kind of difficult situation in some time where they're kind of trying to finesse something, trying to slow the economy down to avoid some of the overheating problems that might have existed without actually moving into a downturn. So the Federal Reserve is very powerful, but they're not all-powerful. If we get down more to the state level, the state government has some influence, but there's even less power there. So I think basically private sector decisions are the things that drive the economy. The governments can, federal government, the state governments can do things that will mess the economy up, that will retard the economy, but they don't basically run the show. Now, you might think, well, that's bad that the government doesn't have the power to control the economy. But the fact is the economy is a very powerful, very efficient way of organizing our activity. And it does a pretty good job on its own to get things done. So I'm not particularly unhappy or particularly displeased by the what I think of as the limited power the government has to control the economy.
Are there is there someone who is omnipotent in Illinois when it comes to the economy? Is there a corporation? Is there a government leader? Is there an agency that has more influence than less around the state?
Well, there's certainly people who are very important both in government and in the private sector. But at the state level and even more so at the local level, governments don't have a great deal of power to control things. We don't have the power to change, for example, in Champaign or Decatur or Danville. There's very little that a community, an isolated community like those could do to really change the way the local economy is going, and even less likelihood they can do much for the broader economy. But there are obviously very important actors in Illinois. The governor of Illinois, the mayor of Chicago are very powerful, and then there are firms that have a great deal of power in limited areas. So they can make very significant decisions that will have big impacts, but they can't really make things happen in the sense of curing a recession or getting rid of some systemic problem that we might have.
So is it right in general to say that the economy heals itself, so to speak, rather than having a doctor like the Federal Reserve come in and try to heal it?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. The economy does, in fact, heal itself. It's argued, though, the healing process may be fairly long and fairly painful, that the recovery is not instantaneous. And the hope would be that the Federal Reserve and the federal government in general could make the transition faster and easier and reduce the pain. Now, history tells us that sometimes that's the case. Sometimes they actually increase the pain rather than reduce it. There are periods of time when I think people would believe that the federal government has, in fact, caused inflationary situations. There's good reason to believe that the Great Depression that started with a crash in 1929 and became really serious in the 1930s was actually aggravated by federal policy as opposed to being reduced by policy. In the early days, the Federal Reserve System actually contracted the money supply and made things worse rather than better. So the government does have the power to improve, but it also has the power to do harm as well. And the hope is that they'll do the good things, not the bad things.
Yeah, generally, you don't see a lot of stories in the media on the front page of the paper at the top of the newscast about the economy. What you do tend to see are stories, at least recently in Illinois, about the closing of Bridgestone Firestone in Decatur, about Boeing being landed in Chicago. What impact and effect do things like that have on the economy? Obviously, the closing of Bridgestone Firestone has immediate impact in Decatur itself.
Right. I think they're, to a certain extent, indicative that they're a way of actually seeing it in a kind of concrete way what's happening. If we see Boeing coming into Chicago, that suggests that Chicago is, in fact, a viable place for business, and the number of jobs, 500 or 1,000 jobs, may not be a make-or-break kind of thing for Chicago, but I think it's a kind of prestige thing that may make it easier for them to recruit other businesses, and it suggests that Chicago is, in fact, a good place to do business. The Bridgestone-Firestone situation in Decatur is a little bit different because there's a tendency to lump that together with plant closings and the economic downturn that we're experiencing and say this is indicative of the slowdown that we're in right now. And to a certain extent it is, but there's something obviously quite different about the Bridgestone Firestone. That was the situation with Ford, where there was this controversy between the government and Ford and Firestone about what the cause for the tire failures happened to be. And obviously people had different ideas, but much of the blame seemed to be placed on Firestone. Now, the problem with that was not just that it was limited to the particular kind of tires are on the Explorer, but it became a kind of black mark against Firestone in general, and Firestone's demand for their tires went down substantially, and they had to cut back. So this was not a cutback because of the economy in general, because of the economic downturn. It was because of this particular very embarrassing negative kind of occurrence that took place, and it wasn't handled very well, I think, either by Firestone or by Ford. So the point was that Firestone had to cut back. They couldn't keep producing the same number of tires they were producing 2 or 3 years ago because they can't sell them anymore. The question was, how do they cut back? And I think what they thought was, one, that the plant in Decatur is a relatively old plant and maybe not as modern and up-to-date as some other facilities. And also, even more damaging was the fact that the Decatur operation was in a certain way tied to the tire failures. Many of the tires that proved to be not good came from there. So I think in public relations wise, Firestone may have thought that by closing that, it would maybe give people more faith in their brand again. Now, the people in Decatur, the governor, some U.S. representatives and so on are trying to convince Firestone to change their mind. But this is not a typical plant location decision. This is driven by something different. I think this is going to be futile to try to change that decision.
Okay. We have a caller on line one from Champaign. Go ahead. You're on with Fred Gertz.
Yes, I'm just following up on my earlier question. Why do people feel that the government can correct all of their problems? For example, when the price of gasoline goes goes sky high. People say, well, we have to have price controls to get the price down. Do you think that politicians kind of foster this attitude and in order, you know, so their constituents feel that they're doing something to help them get reelected?
Well, politicians, I think, realize their lack of power, that they probably realize that the governor or mayor of Chicago, whoever, is not going to be able to change the price of gasoline very, very easily. But on the other hand, there's a great deal of pressure on the part of their constituents to make something happen. So they have to appear to be active and appear to trying to deal with their constituents' problems, even when that may be beyond their ability to do something about it. And again, the other thing which is difficult is the idea of patience, that I think in retrospect, the best thing we could have done about the high price of gasoline 2 or 3 months ago was to do nothing, not even to worry about it. And in fact, it has gone back down. The problem was at that time, people thought, well, it's not just going up to $1.80 or $2 a gallon. It's going to keep going up to $2.50 or $3, and it's going to reduce tourism. It's going to mean all kinds of negative things on the economy. And the people in government did, in fact, probably step in when the best thing to do would be to do nothing. And to a certain extent, I think we tend to overreact. Even the gasoline problem was never really a crisis. It was sort of a annoying sort of thing and some fear that it might get worse. The energy crisis, the electricity crisis in California was more serious. But even that, I think, is one where the government probably created the problem to begin with. And by trying to keep things from changing, especially having higher prices for electricity, they made the solution more difficult rather than less difficult. So the remedy that an economist probably would give would be to relax and let the market work and to let things work itself out, that prices do have a function, that a higher price of electricity, a higher price of gasoline will elicit more supply. It will result in the problem eventually being reduced. But politicians don't have the luxury of being able to wait that long, and they tend to intervene sometimes when simply standing by and waiting would be the best strategy.
As you examine the numbers and look over the figures from around the state of Illinois, do you see pockets of geographic problems, so to speak, anywhere around the state that need to be addressed sooner than others?
Well, I think that you can sort of characterize, aside from the rural economy, the agricultural economy, characterize Illinois in three categories. The first is the Chicago metropolitan area, and the Chicago metro area has been doing very well in recent years, largely because of the strength of not of manufacturing like in the old days, but the strength of the service sector, legal services, financial services, and corporate headquarters. And so Chicago has tended to do pretty well. I'm saying Chicago, not just the city of Chicago, but the Chicago metro area. Downstate, you can sort of divide into two categories. One category would be the cities that rely very heavily on the service economy. They tend to be doing pretty well and are pretty stable. That would be Springfield, Bloomington Normal, and Champaign-Urbana. Springfield has a state government. Bloomington Normal has Illinois State and Illinois Wesleyan, and then insurance companies, State Farm and Country Companies and so on, that tend to be relatively stable. And then obviously Champaign and Urbana have the University of Illinois. So we haven't shot up and expanded really rapidly, but we had a great deal of stability and a great deal of long-run strength. The other category would be downstate industrial cities like Danville, Decatur, Peoria, Rockford, Moline, places like that, where they rely very heavily on manufacturing. They have experienced more of a downturn because manufacturing has taken more of a hit. And over the long run, their prospects aren't quite as strong because manufacturing employment is, in fact, declining. Now, you might ask, isn't that a bad thing, that we're having fewer people working in manufacturing? Well, the answer is it's not a good thing for the cities right now, but in the long term, it's actually a good sign because we're becoming more efficient. Just like a couple hundred years ago, 95% of the people had to work on farms to produce food. Now, 2 or 3% of the people work on farms to produce food. That's freed up a lot of resources to do other things. Well, the same thing, although not quite as dramatically, has been happening in manufacturing. We're producing more, but using fewer people to do that because we're becoming more efficient. And the good thing about that is that we're more competitive on the world market. Consumers can buy items, refrigerators, TV sets, whatever it is, much more cheaply than they could many years ago. The downside is, though, that some people are being laid off from their jobs because it didn't take as many people to produce the same amount, even more goods and services. So that's why some of these downstate industrial cities have not been doing very well over the last 20 years or so. It's simply that manufacturing output is growing, manufacturing employment is in fact shrinking because of increased efficiency.
This is Focus 580. I'm John Paul, filling in for David Inge this week, today and on Friday. We invite you to join our conversation today with Fred Gertz, professor of economics and member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Macroeconomics issues are his specialty, especially as they affect Illinois government and the Illinois economy. You can call us in the Champaign-Urbana area at 333-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free from anywhere else within the listening area, 800-222-9455. What about the world economy and how Illinois reacts or rides along in the wave of the world economy? When I look at corporations like Archer Daniels Midland, Caterpillar, let alone the Illinois agricultural economy and its influences beyond the borders of the United States.
Well, Illinois actually is a strong exporter. That's one thing that I think people are sometimes confused about. Some people think that the best strategy for Illinois would be to have some type of policy that would protect American industry, keep foreign goods out, trying to promote more domestic production. The fact is Illinois is a very important exporter, that we're very efficient in doing several things. Agriculture, we're very efficient, various kinds of manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, and so on. And having the ability to sell those things abroad is very important to us. So free trade or freer trade actually is a strong positive for the Illinois economy, not a negative. And there's also kind of a long, not a long story, but a story that takes place over a fairly long period of time that shows how resilient the Illinois economy is. If you go back 20 years ago to the early 1980s, that was the last really serious recession the United States experienced. We had a minor one in 1990, but the last really bad recession was around 1981 or so. And Illinois was really devastated by that recession. If you remember, we was talking about the Rust Belt and the fact that the older Northeast and Midwest manufacturing simply couldn't compete anymore. Almost every, it wasn't just an occasional layoff. Almost every day there was a story about some plant shutting in Kankakee or Rockford or wherever it might be. Rockford had the highest unemployment rate in the country at one time, nearly 25%. So things were not very good for Illinois back 20 years ago. And you might think, well, that sort of would have been the sign of a downhill movement for the state in general. But what actually happened was that the transition made it stronger. In the early period of after the recession, there were lots of restructuring, lots of layoffs. We actually became more efficient. It was kind of an impetus to the manufacturing sector to make their production process better, more efficient, more competitive. And starting about the mid-1980s, we actually started growing faster than the rest of the country. In the recession of 1990, we really weren't hurt very much. We had a very, very modest amount of damage in Illinois compared to the rest of the country, and we continued to be very strong during the 1990s. I think that could be traced back to the fact that we did some restructuring. We made some painful decisions. And even though it was painful at the time, it made us stronger for the long run. So sometimes there is, in fact, a kind of a positive impact of what seems to be a very bad thing in the short run. The other thing, which is kind of maybe surprising for Illinois, is that we have not directly benefited very much from the high-tech boom. If you look at the state of Illinois, we're never ranked very high in terms of high-tech companies comparable to Seattle with Microsoft or Silicon Valley, Massachusetts, places like that. So you might think we've sort of been left out of the high-tech revolution. What actually has happened in Illinois is that we haven't been on the forefront in terms of creating the new high-tech developments, but we have been very effective and very, very good about incorporating those things into our production process. we've made use of these high-tech developments, embedded them in our manufacturing production. We've actually become much more efficient in a variety of areas making use of high-tech, even though we're not necessarily developing it. So Illinois has, in fact, been a beneficiary, even though they have not been on the forefront of creating high-tech innovation.
Fred, as you look at the Illinois economy and you look at your flash index and you look at all of these statistics and measurements that seem to be released by the government, are there some things you look at that are more important or get a little bit more scrutiny than other things? I mean, does the unemployment rate, does the consumer price index, does the layoff rate, does the employment level, what is it that you look at and go, that's really important? And for that matter, as we look at coming out of maybe the right. soft landing you referred to earlier, right. what do we need to look for as the first signs that the sun's going to rise?
Well, we'll look at the signs that it might not rise. And in fact, the two things that have provided a great deal of stability have been the consumer spending based on retail sales and individual income tax collections, which is basically personal income. Those have been pretty strong and pretty stable. Now, if those were to go down substantially, that would be a negative sign as far as I'm concerned, a bad sign about the fact that we may be not just in a slowdown, but maybe going into recession. That hasn't happened yet, but that's something that I'd be concerned with. The other part that is very important but much more volatile is corporate profits. And corporate profits have been high, and they tend to go up and down much more rapidly than most of the other components. So I would look over a longer term for a rebound of corporate profits to kind of give us a sign that the economy is, in fact, moving forward again.
And that's a function of the stock market.
No, it's the other way around. The stock market, by and large, is driven by expectations about profit. So if profitability looks good for firms, you would expect the stock market to respond by going up. So it's not – there is some – interchange, but more, I would argue more that profits drive the stock market, not that the stock market drives the profits.
Let's check in with a caller on line four from Chicago. Go ahead, you're on Focus 580.
Well, thank you. It's really instructive, but I got to go back to economics 101. When we talk about the farmers that used to work and suddenly they're displaced by the technology, so that so few are working. Similarly, in industry, along came the robots, assembly lines, and computers, and there's less people working there. And as technology seems to be serving the role as servants of humanity and people, you wonder who's going to be making any money if the robots and the other things are doing all the work and the people aren't. So that's one kind of question. If the economy has to be fueled by consumer spending, and on the other hand, taxes are inevitable forever, it seems. But as you just pointed out, the potential for the diminishing supply of tax revenue, which is occurring as a result of technology suddenly creating a moratorium on collection of taxes over the internet and to the neglect and suffering of the local communities that relied upon taxes to maintain their civil functions and so forth. So we've got a dilemma there, and I'm wondering where, if you want to say it's going to turn around, or could you care to comment on any of that?
Now, let me divide it into two parts. The first one is the bigger question, and that's the question of what's happening with the increased efficiency, automation, and so on. And again, there's two stories here. The short-term story is one of hardship. The fact is that farmers have been driven off farms for economic reasons. It's not just something that's happened in the last 5 years or 10 years. It's been happening for a couple centuries. So obviously, if someone would prefer to work on a small farm and they can't make it anymore and they have to move to the city and look for a job, that's not a pleasant thing. And so there is this transitional kind of thing. But over the long run, we're much better off having a very efficient farming sector and having people available to work in a lot of other activities who otherwise would have worked on farms. Now, the same story is occurring, although less maybe less dramatically and maybe a little bit slower pace in manufacturing. It used to be many years ago that there were lots of manufacturing jobs. People could graduate from high school or even not graduate from high school, move into the employment sector, get a job in a factory, and make a pretty good wage. That's not very easy anymore because there aren't that many jobs. And again, that's a problem. It's a problem for the person who's a high school dropout. There's not a lot of good jobs around, but there's also an opportunity. It means that we have more people available to do higher value kind of things, working with high tech computers, service industries, things of that sort. But again, it's not without pain. The person who doesn't have the skills to make the transition is going to be in a difficult position. People who are laid off from Firestone are not going to find a job in a high-tech industry in the next week or two, so it's difficult for them. But over the long run, it means that we do, in fact, have a more productive economy, and it means that we also are better able to compete with the rest of the world. We're not really in a position to compete with a lot of low-skilled manufacturing activity. We compete in a different area on a different margin with high-tech activities, very efficient production, high-tech agricultural production, things of that sort. That's where we can make it, not in maintaining the old line kind of plodding manufacturing industry. So again, I have this short run and long run view. The short run view is that it's a painful thing to make the transition. The long run view is that making the transition makes it stronger and more effective and more competitive. Now, the other issue, which is a very important one, but a more targeted one, is the problem of the taxes. Yeah, the taxes, especially state and local taxes. As most listeners probably know, the sales tax is one of the major sources of revenue for the state of Illinois, and it's very important for a lot of cities and counties. It's the second most important source of revenue for the state government after the income tax, and it's the second most important source of revenue for local governments after the property tax. And the problem here is that because of a kind of legal environment, some purchases now that are made over the internet are not taxed. If you go into a store and buy a book or buy a computer or a camera or something of that sort, you buy it, you pay the bill, and the store adds on 6%, 7%, 8% tax that goes to the state and the local government. Now, if you buy that same product from an out-of-state vendor, someone who doesn't operate in Illinois and has no substantial presence in Illinois, they'll ship that to you, and you don't have to pay tax directly on that. So to the extent that people start buying more and more from the internet, there is potentially an erosion of the tax base. Now, there's a sort of practical and a legal question. Legally, if you buy a product from an out-of-state vendor, even though they don't have to collect the tax, the state of Illinois still expects you to pay what's called a use tax in lieu of the sales tax. So if you buy a camera from someplace on the internet or a book from Amazon or clothes from L.L. Bean or something of that sort, you're supposed to remit the tax that would have been paid on that to the state of Illinois under the use tax. So it's not that the tax isn't legally due. The problem, as you can well imagine, is that the state doesn't have a very good way of collecting that tax.
I heard a comment made some time ago that is even before the internet and all that, that if the state could collect, and even the local city governments could collect all the sales tax that had for purchases that had been made, they wouldn't even have the need for a state income tax.
Well, I think that's overstating it. It would reduce the...
If the people are supposed to voluntarily say they purchase something over the internet and pay the tax, so the matter of collection is something that's lacking in enforcement and auditing and so forth.
Right. Now, there's a lot of activity in this area. This is not going to notice. The states are worried about this. Local governments are worried about this. Because if you think about it, what would happen if the base arose and more things are purchased in a way where the state can't collect the tax? Well, the state still has to carry out its activities, and the local governments still have to carry out their activities, so it may well be that other taxes, the income tax and the property tax, would have to be increased to make up that loss. Now there is something going on. There's something called there's a streamlined sales tax program going on that about 30 or 40 states are involved with. They're trying to figure out ways to make it easier for taxes to be collected with out-of-state vendors. This requires a cooperation of the federal government. And the hope is that if Illinois and other states modernize and streamline their system of collecting sales taxes, the federal government will eventually require vendors to collect the tax, and that will be a way of dealing with this. So we're in a period here where we're trying to make the adjustment. We haven't done it yet, but there's a lot of interest in trying to make sure we don't lose this source of tax revenue.
Could I get one more final question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we've gone from agriculture to industry to the internet. Well, then there's the area of finance itself. Do you ever think that taxes on every transaction would ever occur? I know this was speculated some time ago as a source of revenue.
Are you talking about like service transactions?
I think like stock sales.
Stock and bond transactions.
Well, first of all, that could never happen at the state or local level. If any one state did that, all the activity would move to another state. The only way it could happen would be
overall
a federal tax. And there have been some suggestions to do that. I think it's probably not a very good idea and probably not very likely to happen. So that would not be high on my list of areas to look for new tax revenue.
Well, thank you for calling today. I want to move along. I do have some other callers in today. Let's check into a caller on line one from Champaign.
Yes, if I could just return to planet Earth for a few minutes here. 20 years is, I think, the long run. I think it's a quarter of most people's lives. And in the last 20 years, the average worker has seen his or her income, perhaps barely rise or perhaps reach the point that it was in 1979 or 1980. The average worker has become much more insecure in his or her job. The average worker is working longer hours in his or her job, has a lower quality of family life because it spends less time with his or her family. The average worker is not receiving the government services that he or she was receiving 20 years ago. The average worker does not have the health care insurance, may not be dependent on inferior health care insurance, or may not be insured whatsoever, or may have to buy it on the private market. 20 years, again, is a long time. This is the long run. The long run has not been kind to average workers in this country. I wonder if the economics professor, who is privileged not to have to bear the vicissitudes of the marketplace, being an employee at the University of Illinois, I wonder if the economics professor could address these issues.
Well, obviously you have a fairly negative view about the last 20 years, which I think is not particularly warranted. There are a lot of changes. We have smaller families. Family income isn't going up as much as otherwise would because they're often only one worker in a family rather than two. The fact is, though, there have been really substantial and almost fantastic gains in terms of how people live their lives. If you think about not necessarily some kind of measure of income, but a measure of consumption, the level of consumption really is unprecedented in terms of...
Is consumption a measure of the quality of life?
Not a full measure, but clearly
What percentage measure is it?
Well, I think it's very important. People are living in bigger homes. They travel more. They have higher.
People pay larger percentages of their income in rent or mortgage payments.
They may or may not, but the fact is, in almost every standard, even if you look at poor people, their level of consumption is much higher than it was before. Their food consumption, housing consumption, automobiles, whether they have air conditioning, cable TV, television, a whole variety of things, they're living a much higher standard of living than they ever have in the past, and than almost anyone any place in the world is. So again, there are obviously people who are left out. There are people who are not doing as well as they would like. There are people who are working hard. There are people who are sick and so on. So I'm not suggesting that everything is great, but the fact is that, again, we there's sort of a basic disagreement here. I think we're considerably better off in terms of the material standard of living today than we were 20 years ago. Now, you could argue about whether people's moral values have changed or whether their family relationships are as good and things of that sort, and that's a different question.
I don't think people's moral values have changed. I think the leadership class's moral values haven't changed, and the leadership class's moral values is that profits are more important than people, and that the quality of life is dependent on consumption and not on human relationships and social and moral social values.
Would you prefer to see a consumption tax?
I don't have, this is a technical issue. I would prefer to see a fair graduated tax system in which the people who benefit most from our economy pay the kind of taxes that A, aren't invested in the military, and B, are invested in improving the lives of average people.
Well, and clearly, you obviously have a lot of concerns, a lot of issues with the way society is run, and that's your opinion. But even in an area that you probably are concerned with, the environment. You would think, well, hasn't the environment really gone downhill the last 20 years? Aren't we living in dirtier air and drinking dirtier water and so on? The fact is that we're a lot better off in terms of the environment. Environmental quality is much higher today than it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. It's sort of a byproduct of having a richer, stronger country. So, again,
I think that that's a highly debatable proposition, especially the poorer you are. The poorer you are, the more you are exposed to environmental hazards, workplace conditions, occupational health and safety, all these kinds of issues just aren't being seriously addressed, and they can't be seriously addressed in any kind of free market model that you're offering.
No, you obviously have a very negative view about the world, about especially the American economy.
I have a negative view about the kind of system that you advocate.
Well, if you look at even by the standards you're talking about, today the workplace is much, much safer. Industrial accidents are much lower than before. Many fewer people are killed on the job than ever in the past. We're much, much safer in that regard. The life expectancy is going up. People are living longer lives than ever, much longer than every decade there's a substantial increase.
When you aggregate things, you can say whatever you want, but the lower you are down, there is increasing economic disparity in this culture that tears at the social fabric. It tears at people's faith in the system, and the lower down you are, starting in the middle and going down to the lowest, the more cynical people are about the kind of things, the kind of rosy picture that people like you have to offer.
Well, we have to move along. I do have one call left, and I do want to get to one more caller who's been waiting patiently in Chicago on line two. Quickly, we only have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, but what your guest is sounding like to me is a glorified bookkeeper, and he doesn't really look into the basic causes for the economic activity that's going on. And in that way, I essentially agree with the previous caller. In the long run that you talk about, we're all dead, as a better economist than you stated several generations ago, and John Maynard Keynes. What's necessary for this highly technological society that we're in is more education, more government controls on these industries that are running rampant and so on, and the United States is falling further and further behind in the training of engineers, programmers, systems analysts. India is ahead of us, and that's, their classes in those particular fields of students are way larger than the United States, and the money of American businesses are going overseas, where particularly to Indians. And similarly, similar people.
Okay, let me give Professor Gertz a chance to answer.
Well, again, if your belief is that things are bad, things appear bad, I think. But the fact is that we're doing very well. This is not the best time we've had in the last 5 or 10 years, but still we have a 5% unemployment rate, which would be great by historical standards. We have inflation under control. We, in fact, are rewarding people who go to school. Education does pay off. We have educational opportunities, and people who take advantage of those opportunities tend to do well. We've absorbed a large number of people from foreign countries who have come into the country and been productive. So, again, I think people are looking at all the bad news, not the good news. Obviously, everything is not good, but we are, in fact, in a very positive situation. We do have a strong economy, and I think we can look forward to that continuing.
Fred, thank you very much for the discussion this morning. Fred Gertz, a U of I economist and member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, thank you for being our guest today on Focus 580.
Thank you.